Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lap podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today, we review the Austrian GP with a double DNF of Mercedes. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Vogel. Hello everyone to episode 96 of the Fastest Lap podcast. And who would have thought Ferrari is leading both drivers and constructors world championship after Austria. And even more surprising, Max Verstappen won the race. Is it possible that we have the most exciting season since 2012?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite possible. Of course, we can kind of only really judge that right at the end of the season. Certainly, though, the start of the season, the opening nine races have been of course some of the races haven't been entirely exciting, but there's been plenty of talking points and plenty of stories coming from all the Grand Prix so far. We have four different race winners in nine races, which, you know, last year or 2 years ago you'd never really expect. Mercedes's run of domination, but now it's great to see these more frequent different winners. And definitely, I mean, heading into Austria, I really did not expect to see Max Verstappen come away as the eventual race winner.
Yeah, and let's get right into it. I mean, the start already was pretty exciting. Ferrari again opting to go for the Ultra, or the, yeah, it was the Ultra? No, what's the pink one again? Which one did they use?
Ultrasoft, yeah.
Yeah, it was the Ultrasoft. I wasn't quite sure. Yeah, it was the Ultrasoft, and Mercedes used the Supersoft then to start the race on. And yeah, it meant Ferrari again had one or two or three or five or whatever meters of an advantage for the start. And you could really see that with Kimi Raikkonen. He had a pretty good start, and the gap was pretty tight between both Mercedes, but still Kimi decided to go for the gap, and yeah, it was quite close, and he actually managed to overtake Bottas into turn one, and Hamilton overtook Bottas as well. Bottas had to go off the track a little bit, but quite an exciting first turn, although surprisingly we didn't see any contact there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was very, very surprised that all three of them managed to get through the first corner without any contact. I mean, that corner is unbelievably tight, and going three wide into it is a recipe for disaster. But they're all experienced, they're all good racers, and they got through perfectly okay. Good start by Hamilton getting past Bottas, who had a great qualifying to get pole position the day before. Hamilton won at the start, and Raikkonen got past Bottas, really, really sprung out well from P3. And then on the run, I think turn three, when Raikkonen Hamilton went defensive, and Raikkonen was on the outside of the corner and just seemed to outbrake himself a little bit and went wide, which caused for a bit more action to come on the head down to turn four.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go to the turn four story, let's go back. As you said, Hamilton had a pretty good start getting alongside Bottas. But one thing I asked myself even before the start, I thought like, well, the run to turn one is so short, and basically I was asking myself whether it is actually a disadvantage to start on the left-hand side of the track. I mean, of course, it is the racing line. There's more rubber down, But if you have the inside for turn one, you can push the other guy out, and it maybe it is a little bit the same compared to Spa, for example, where the pole position is on the right side to give a better position breaking into turn one. What do you think about that?
Yeah, possibly, you know, it's kind of, well, you know, at the end of the day, the drivers are going to use everything they have to get the best start they possibly can. And, I mean, genuinely, I just think Hamilton had a better start than Bottas, but there wasn't really much that Bottas could do. I think he was just Hamilton just got the better jump, I think, and I think these things just happen in racing and Formula One starts. But it poses an interesting question, and I'd like to see the drivers answer it. You know, which would they prefer? Would they prefer to go to have the side of the grid that's the racing line that has more grip, or would they prefer to have the line, the inside line for the first corner? You know, on many tracks, you get the two in one go, but I think it'd be an interesting question to see which one they'd prefer, because it would give a big insight, I think, into which holds more of an advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's now go back to turn four. Still confused why they take that kink before turn three as a turn two, but whatever. Turn four. I was watching it, I was like, what? Where the hell did Bottas come from? It was like amazing. He had a very good exit out of turn three then. And as you said, Kimi outbreaks himself a little bit, compromised Verstappen's exit off turn three. And yeah, Bottas took advantage of that, went into the slipstream of Raikkonen, and yeah, went clean around the outside of both of them. And yeah, so we had a Mercedes 1-2 after the first half lap, and I didn't expect that at all, to be honest, after the first few corners. So pretty good recovery by Bottas there, although he would have wanted to stay in P1, of course, after qualifying. And so Bottas, one star off the first lap for me, but also Verstappen with that move on Kimi Raikkonen into turn or whatever it is, but in the infield of the track. And I want to know your opinion of that, of course. Was it a clean and a fair move of him? My opinion, it was on the edge. You know, Kimi gave him some room. Maybe it was tight, but in my opinion, that's racing. You know, nobody got hurt. He tapped him a little bit with a tire, but for me, it was okay. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to give the argument that Verstappen bumped him out of the way a little bit, got him offline, and then Verstappen was able to drive through. But I've seen the replay a few times now, and I mean, if you just look at Verstappen's onboard, he's committed to the corner, and his arm, he turns left, and his arms, his steering wheel stays locked fully left. The car just seems to maybe understeer a small bit. He doesn't correct the car, he doesn't straighten up the steering wheel at any point. So I think it's a fine move, and because he was already alongside, he didn't, you know, go up the inside of of Raikkonen into that corner. He was already alongside Raikkonen, so I think it was a fair move, to be honest. It was just, yeah, one of those things in racing, you know, a long, fast corner like that, it can easily happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a good move, and of course, looking ahead to the end of the race, it was basically the move for the win, to put it that way. Not so good first lap for Charles Leclerc, who had a little bit off in the middle of the track into the gravel. I don't know what happened actually to him. Did you see a replay of that?
No, I haven't seen a replay, so I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah, so Charles Leclerc at the back of the field, and also the McLaren of Van Dorn, who had to pit for a new front wing after he hit Toro Rosso into turn three. But yeah, a lot of action in the first lap, really exciting to watch. And yeah, after that, it looked a little bit like we would get another kind of boring race with a lot of cars following each other. But I do think that it was also caused by the TV director, because I read on Twitter like, well, there are some pretty good battles in the midfield, and driver X overtook someone else and whatever, and we didn't see that on television at all. So I'm not quite sure whether that was quite representative, but I think, if I remember correctly, the next big thing was the DNF of Valtteri Bottas, right?
Yeah, well, I think Hülkenberg had his retirement first. Quite a dramatic engine failure for Hülkenberg, you know, going out
the new party mode.
Going out in a big puff of smoke. But then after that, I believe it was Bottas who retired next.
And he caused a VSC, right?
Yeah, which would ultimately ruin Hamilton's race. But well, until his own engine problems definitely ruined his race. But yeah, I mean, when we cut to Bottas going slowly, I felt so bad for the guy once again. I mean, he was so happy with himself yesterday after getting pole position. He was in a good position today, and yeah, once again, just bad luck against him. And another DNF, and I think, you know, time could soon be running out for Bottas to be a contender in this championship. I think if he had the luck on his side this year, he'd be right in the fight. But it's really just not going his way right now, and it's a shame because he's been driving so well.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I mean, so many times he had bad luck this season. I mean, Azerbaijan and so many other occasions when it happened. And yeah, you really just had to feel sorry for him. And I think he even said it in the interview. It's kind of like a bad joke or whatever, you know. It's always happening to him. Well, not always, as we saw with Hamilton. But yeah, it's really hard to believe that it's all well. I don't want to start any theories here, but it's really, and I don't want to start them, period. It's just very, very strange to see that happening to him all the time, really. So, but yeah, as I mentioned, the DNF of Bottas, he parked the car, I thought, in an okay-ish place at the end of turn, what was it? I think it was on the outside of turn 4, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but still it caused a VSC. Not quite, I didn't quite understand why, to be honest. But it meant that most of the cars basically stopped for a new set of tires, except for one of the top running cars, which was Hamilton. And at the time, I think even the VSC lasted for two laps, so he had two chances to pit under the VSC, but they didn't choose to do that. And James Walves, the race strategist, took the blame for that. He said it was his mistake, but boy, it was a really big mistake.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, I mean, it was a huge mistake. It, and even after the VSC ended, it was clear that Hamilton didn't have the pace on his tires to build a gap to Verstappen, who was running in second place. I think Verstappen was like 13 seconds behind, and Hamilton needed a gap of 20 seconds. So, I mean, they made the mistake. I mean, I wonder if Hamilton thought himself to dive into the pit lane when he seen the VSC, but I mean, Mercedes gave the view that, well, if they had pitted, then you know, Red Bull and Ferrari could have split their strategies and left, you know, one of the cars out and left and brought one of the other cars in to pit. But I mean, that doesn't really make sense to me, because you know, they both double stacked. You could see them double stacking if they, yeah, I don't know. It was just a big error by Mercedes, and yeah, Hamilton came out in P4, P5, behind, or well, in front of Vettel, and yeah, then we got a spicy battle between those two on the track soon afterwards.
Yeah, exactly, and it was quite a similar move to the Rosberg-Hamilton move a few years ago, but this time executed with perfection, and I thought it was really well done by Sebastian Vettel. First of all, getting around the outside turn two, well, now we can use that turn, but then, yeah, really late on the brakes, leaving Hamilton basically no room, but still turning in pretty sharply, making the apex, and Hamilton had room to turn in as well. So a pretty good move, I thought. Although you have to say Hamilton was struggling with his tires pretty at that stage with some blistering.
Yeah, but it was still, I thought it was a great move by Vettel, you know, making the line really, really tight so that Hamilton couldn't get a chance to turn in early, or turn in, yeah, like later into the corner, so he could switch back. You know, he left it really as late as possible. I think it was a great overtake by Vettel, and yeah, I mean, Hamilton was really struggling on the tires. We've seen during the race, we've seen a lot of blistering, particularly for Daniel Ricciardo. I mean, his tires were really, really bad, and Hamilton too, we could see, was struggling. But yeah, and then yeah, it was a fantastic move by Vettel, and I'm sure he was smiling very widely underneath his helmet, having overtaken his championship rival on track.
Yeah, I think he had a smile on his face, and Hamilton this time didn't wipe his smile off the face. So yeah. It was a really good move, but Hamilton's mood obviously got even worse a few laps after that, when I think it was a fuel pressure issue that ultimately ended his race. And yeah, really unexpected to see that, to put it that way, because I think the set was, it could have been his 34th or 33rd, I'm not quite sure, do you know, 33rd consecutive race finish in the points?
I think his current run, it would have been his 34th, yeah. I mean, the last time he retired from a race was 2016 Malaysia, when he had that engine failure. And yeah, I mean, it's so weird to see Hamilton park up like that, because yeah, we're really, really just not used to seeing him retire from races. He's had really good reliability over the last year or so, and yeah, I mean, it's a really rare sight anyway to see a Mercedes park up like that, but to see two of them in the one race with mechanical failures, that's something we haven't seen at all in the hybrid era. I mean, Mercedes have been proud of their abilities in their reliability, so yeah, it was a real shock to see both of them retire in the one race due to car issues.
Yeah, and I thought after the race, when I had a little bit of time thinking about it, I thought maybe it could have something to do with the new aero package they have, because it has now much slimmer side pods and a slimmer rear. Maybe it meant that they have had to reorganize the packaging in the rear, and it meant that maybe some parts were overheating that they didn't expect. But of course, we don't know, and probably will never know. It's just a speculation I had, basically. So yeah, and in all of that chaos, Verstappen still managed to stay in the front, managing his tires pretty well. And as you said, Ricciardo's tires were, yeah, they blistered like hell. Pretty big blister in the middle of his left rear tire, but Verstappen's tires, they looked okay. And yeah, he managed to pace pretty well. And behind that, we had the two Ferraris. Kimi Raikkonen, of course, pushing on towards the end of the race, closing the gap to Verstappen. And Vettel, 1.5 seconds or 2 seconds around that gap behind Kimi Raikkonen. And can you remember last episode? I thought when you made your podium prediction for this race and said Bottas would finish ahead of Hamilton, and I said, if it was Ferrari, surely they'd impose team orders. Well, they didn't, and I was very surprised to see that. Were you?
No, I wasn't surprised, to be honest. There was no need to swap them around like that. I think Ferrari maybe were having flashbacks to 2002 when Schumacher was let by Barrichello, and you know, it would have been terrible publicity for Ferrari. And you know, Vettel himself said after the race that he was glad that he Raikkonen didn't get the order to let Vettel through. He likes the equality side, and it was good to see that the two drivers can in this occurrence anyway, that they were able to finish fairly, I guess, rather than having a team order imposed.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I really like the team lets them race. I was just a little bit surprised because, well, we know Ferrari likes to impose team orders. But in the end, I mean, it would have given Vettel 3 points, and, well, 3 points might not decide the championship. Well, if it does, in hindsight, you could argue, well, why didn't they do it? But I think maybe with that little morale boost, Kimi can outperform Hamilton a few times this season, and then it's even more valuable than those 3 points. I mean, that's I think that's the theory behind all of that, to keep the team morale and the relationship in the team up, and that can really boost the team for the rest of the season. So an interesting race, but how would you rate it out of 10 for our race rating? Of course, you can track that at fastestlappodcast.com/stats.
Yeah, I thought it was a very intriguing race. I would maybe go as far to say that it was my most enjoyable race of the season so far. The race that I enjoyed watching the most, because there was just stories coming left, right, and center, different talking points, and I think the laps went by very, very quickly, and I believe my highest rating so far is, I think it's 7.5, possibly.
I just have the page in front of me. It's 8.8 for Azerbaijan.
Yeah, and you know what? I think Austria 2 warrants an 8 out of 10. I thought it was a great race. There was good action between, you know, the whole way through the field. There was drama, Mercedes at Red Bull. There was lots of talk about the tyres, would they make the end? And then, an unexpected winner. I really, really enjoyed it. And I think an 8 out of 10 is a fair assessment.
Yeah, definitely is. I was also deciding between 7 and 8. 8 is also my highest score. I had that for the Chinese GP, and yeah, as you said, a lot of drama going on. Also, the leading constructor DNFing with two cars. Comparing it with China. I mean, China, we had Verstappen and Vettel crashing. We had an overtaking show of the Red Bulls. We had different tire strategies, safety cars. I think I'll go with a 7. I think I'd prefer to rewatch the Chinese GP compared to the Austria GP. So, yeah, I'm going for a 7. So 7 for me, 8 for you, but all in all, I think we agree the Austrian GP was again a pretty exciting and enjoyable race to watch. In terms of Driver of the Weekend, who did you think did pretty well in Spielberg?
Yeah, I mean, there was some good drives. Of course, Verstappen, you got to say Verstappen, who qualified well, controlled the race.
And got Driver of the Weekend, of course.
Driver of the Day, you mean?
Sorry.
He did really well. Really happy for him. He's really, in the last few races, he's really turned his... the comments about him around, you know, after the start of the season, he was getting criticized. You know, all the time, but now he's really getting into a rhythm, and he did really, really well. But for me, without a doubt, my driver of the weekend has to be Romain Grosjean.
Damn it!
Who just
same year?
Yeah, I mean, like I would be surprised if he picked anyone else. I mean, Grosjean in qualifying alone, he split the Red Bulls in qualifying. He was just fantastic, and in the race coming home in P4, it was just amazing. Especially him too is a driver that has been under a lot of pressure recently, with his lack of point finishes. So it's so good to see Grosjean get a good result, because I really like Grosjean. I don't agree with all the comments that say that he should be out of F1 next year. I think he's much, much better than that, and hopefully this great result will be a springboard for the rest of the season, and he can score consistently like Magnussen has been doing so far. But Grosjean for me for this weekend.
Yeah, I can just copy-paste everything you said. Absolutely great drive from him, as I said, splitting the Red Bulls. And it just came to my mind when you said that some people want him to leave F1. It's like there are so many ups and downs for Grosjean. I can remember when people were talking about Grosjean joining Ferrari, then people wanting him out of Formula 1. It's like a roller coaster ride for him, or it must be for him. So
who is it that says that you're only as good as your last race? So the opinions will change the whole time. So
I mean, same with Verstappen, you know, after a few races ago, he needs to change his style and his approach, and now he is praised by everyone again. It's amazing how media is influencing people, but let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'm not really sure if it's the media or if it's just fans who are having their opinions.
Yeah, I mean, and everybody is entitled to have its opinion. So, yeah, as I said, very enjoyable race, the Austrian GP, and now we are going for the third race in 3 weeks. British GP in Silverstone is coming up this weekend, and the question is, will Lewis Hamilton fight back from that disappointing race weekend? Can he win his home GP, and can Mercedes get their reliability issues fixed for that race? I mean, it's a very short time, less than a week until they have to have their cars basically build up for free practice, and not much time to analyze or rebuild stuff if they discovered some major issues in their packaging. So that's going to be interesting to see, but also the performance, of course. Nobody expected Red Bull to win in Austria with that track layout, but Silverstone with the fast corners where you need some good aerodynamics and some top speed, basically. How will Red Bull do there? How will Ferrari, how will Mercedes compare on that track? Will be an interesting race to watch. And also they announced today that they will have a DRS zone through turn 1 and 2, right?
Yeah, that's a bit I'm a bit skeptical of that. I think that could be a bit dangerous, but obviously they know it should be fine, because they wouldn't just introduce it without knowing what the, you know, how the cars can handle going through corners with DRS. But yeah, that's going to be very interesting to see just how Red Bull shape up against Ferrari and Mercedes in Silverstone. Of course, 12 months ago, Mercedes dominated in Silverstone and Ferrari had their tyre issues. But yeah, I'm really, really excited to see just how the story will go this time around.
Yeah, and I expect it to go similar to last year, to be honest. My podium prediction is to have Hamilton win his home race. I think he's determined to win it. Bottas P2, Vettel P3. So Mercedes will dominate, I think. It is a track that should suit their car pretty well with those high-speed corners and a dependency on engine power. So I think it is a track track that should suit their car. What do you think?
Yeah, well, last week you said the exact same thing about Mercedes going to Spielberg. So, you know, I'm gonna go bold.
Yeah, and obviously last week nobody of us predicted the correct result. So,
yeah, very true. I'm gonna go bold this time though. I think it will be pretty close between Mercedes, Ferrari and Red Bull. But I think, you know, Hamilton has enjoyed a lot of success in Silverstone over the last couple of years. But yeah, I don't know, I'm just going to go out and say that I think Bottas will get his change in luck and win the race. Maybe Ricciardo will get some redemption after Austria and finish in P2. And I think I'm going to toss it up between Vettel and Hamilton for the last place in the podium. But yeah, maybe because it's Hamilton's home race, he'll close out the podium. So Bottas, Ricciardo and Hamilton.
And no Ferrari on the podium. Interesting. So yeah, let's wait and see for that. Yeah, I mean, how are you coping with the triple header? I mean, just experiencing really three Formula One weekends in 3 weeks, I'm thinking like, yeah, I like Formula One, I enjoy watching Formula One, but if you have Formula One every weekend, somehow the special feeling of having that weekend, that Formula One weekend, is going a little bit away. Is it the same for you?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, I know where you're coming from. I do like the tradition of having, you know, a Grand Prix weekend and then a weekend off while we wait for the next one. And, you know, it is part of the season, part of the journey throughout the season. Yeah. And I also feel a bit for the teams and the you know, thousands of people that have to travel over these 3 weeks from country to country to do the work, you know, spending time away from the family. So yeah, it's interesting, but hopefully we'll be getting back to the well, of course, after this triple header, we'll be getting back to the usual routine.
Yeah, and for next season, they already said that they will move the Australian GP more forward so that we don't have to have a triple header. But now we do have it, and next week it's a Silverstone GP. So join us next week for our review of that and hope for an exciting race. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.